This is Garland County Vote 2022, a podcast where we sit down with candidates for local office in Hot Springs. In recent weeks, we've reached out to all city director candidates to participate in one-on-one interviews. Four of the 11 candidates chose to participate. On this episode, we're sitting down with District 2 candidate Phyllis Beard. Several of the other District 2 candidates chose not to be interviewed. So I'll just get started here. We're talking to Phyllis Beard. She's one of, I guess it would be four candidates now for District 2 since Mr. Doug Jones, he announced his withdrawal the other night. So yes. We've got, the field is down to four. And, you know, which one of these topics do you want to talk about the most here? We've got the Majestic, homelessness, affordable housing, vacation rentals, the city's water supply project. Oh yeah, and bonuses about what is your position on paying the city manager and city attorney a bonus? Is that something that you think is appropriate for a government worker, a government official?
Well, you just asked about which topics I would want to talk about.
Yeah, start where you want.
No, I'm answering. We have a problem with the water. And
water.
Then we also have a problem with affordable housing. So I don't feel the city manager should be having or getting bonuses when we have these as problems. Like, I think we need to prioritize.
Okay. So would you be opposed to a bonus in general, or just given if you thought the city manager or city attorney did a really good job promoting a goal for the city? Would you consider, you know, voting to give them a bonus?
Only if they were able to donate their bonus to help with the homeless problem.
Oh, okay.
Or the water problem. There was a $3 increase or something mentioned for residents to pay to help with the water problem. So I would like to suggest the bonus that I would vote on to be going towards the people that were the $3, increase was going to help with their water problem. And I would also maybe send them a nice fruit basket.
Okay.
That's what I get.
I'm sure they'd like that. Homelessness. Did you hear at the forum the other night, Mr. Capace, he's running for mayor, right?
Yes.
He said that he would propose a voluntary assessment for the board to put on people's property taxes. Like, we have one of those for animal services in the county, spay or neuter. You know, you can decide, to pay $10 on that. What did you think of that idea, doing that to raise money and resources to address the homelessness issue here in town?
I didn't really follow everything that he had mentioned, but I definitely think that his church is such a staple in the community. Like, they're wanting to help with the problem. They recognize it as a problem, so I think he has a good ear to help assist with that. I mean, as far as the details, I didn't really follow, and I don't have a lot of information on that, but mm-hmm. He has a lot of energy, and I think he has some good ideas to help with that.
Do you want to talk about, we kind of touched on a little bit, the water supply problem the city's having with its water supply project, I should say, not with water supply in general. We may have a problem with having too much water, if that's a problem. That's a problem I'm sure people in other parts of the country or world would be very envious of.
Yes, well, we want to make sure we don't end up like Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, right.
And, along with people, water is our greatest resource. I don't know why, or actually, I do understand why there's a problem, but you know, it maybe it was some things that went wrong or mismanaged. I don't think that that should be a burden on the taxpayers. I think we need to get together and figure it out and ask experts. Now, who those experts are, that have to find that out. But yeah, I think there, if something's going over budget, that it needs to be like addressed before it's over budget.
Now, some people, maybe not really in the District 2 race, but in just kind of the overall conversation going on right now in municipal government concerning this election is the water rates are too high, right? The rates are too high. And some people have even talked about, well, if I got elected, I'd get your rates reduced. But it's interesting how you mentioned Jackson, Mississippi, to where... I don't know a lot about the problem there, but I would assume that they haven't been investing in their water infrastructure and keeping it up because, I mean, once you put that those kind of facilities in the ground, you've made a long-term commitment to maintaining them and keeping them going.
Right.
Do you even think it's possible to lower water rates without causing... knock-on effects that could be catastrophic, like what we're seeing in Jackson?
Well, my understanding is there's something about a bond, because I know in listening to the mayor's race, one is saying they're going to lower the rates, and another one says, well, we have this bond. So that is a lot more... You have to give and take, and I don't know what that middle is. So there are, like, you know, more experts, again, that I would need to consult with. But it is a problem. It's a problem, you know, in other cities. And I think we should, you know, be aware so we don't want to not have access to drinking water. I mean, it's just we just have to have that.
Right, and on the other end, you've got Mayor McCabe talking about, well, people are saying the rates are too high, but look at all the foresight that we've shown here, this board and maybe some of the two or three previous ones, in taking this big initiative to bring all this water from Lake Washita and to treat it. And they're saying, you know, we're going to have plenty of water for the next 3, 4, 5 generations. So it is kind of a balance, right?
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah, that stuff costs money. You have to pay for it.
Right.
Are the people you're talking to out on the campaign, or are they saying that they think their water bills are too high? Is that a concern that you're hearing?
No, it's not. And I'm not saying that it's not a concern, but that's not what they bring up when I talk to, you know, I get a lot of people speeding through neighborhoods.
Right.
You know, I've talked to a couple residents where they've had their dogs killed just because they were out in the streets. And then I get a lot of stormwater drains or water coming into people's yards and houses. And then lots of nuisance property owners that have, I know they're, what is the rule, 6 inches. Well, these are like stalks, like forest. And reptiles and rodents will come into their yard that they keep up. So that's probably the three that I get the most concerns about.
Right. I think when you're probably working in municipal government or an elected official in municipal government, I would imagine those are probably a lot of the complaints you would hear. Things that, you know, may seem small, but to the people you're representing are big.
Right.
You know, people don't want speeding through their neighborhoods,
right,
running over their pets, things like that.
Right.
Well, let's talk about affordable housing. And District 2 has a lot of abandoned properties, right? People, I guess, who have gotten homes willed to them or bequeathed to them or handed down through the years. They don't live here anymore. And
exactly.
So those homes have kind of been left to nature, right?
Right.
What can be done to address that?
I think they should maybe be given, you know, pay, because I see a lot where people have a house or their relative gave them a house, and then they live in Texas somewhere. Like, they don't even come back to visit Hot Springs And it can become a problem for, like, neighbors. You know, if they're not keeping up the yard or even maintenance on the house, there may be some kind of fine or notice, like, hey, you know, take a look at this. It's causing a problem. But it seems like they're able to go live their life over here and then have this property that's not being maintained or kept up, and nothing's being said about it. That's how, now it could be different, but that's how it looks to me. But you know, for properties that are just not paid attention to by anyone, you know, maybe they can go up in auction or something. People could buy them, because I see a direct relation between homeless people and then these abandoned properties that aren't being maintained. Like, why can't we get them two together so that so people aren't on the streets anymore?
Right, it creates a real hazard. I think, weren't you at the civil service meeting, maybe, I don't know, back in the spring, right, where Chief Davis was talking about one of those houses on Pleasant Street, I think, pretty close to Malvern, that burned because, you know, people were living in there, right?
Yeah, he said they were, I think they're doing something to keep warm, and then the house catches on fire,
right.
And that's really, that is really sad for me, because there's only a few houses on, wait, are you talking, I think you were talking about Gulfa Street.
Gulfa Street, you're right, that my bad, right,
that's Gulfa. Because I'm like, wait, there's a lot of houses on Pleasant, but yeah, that there's only two houses in that block, and I think back when I was little, there was hotels there and houses, and then my mom's friend's barbecue joint that has so many memories to me. So when they tore that house down, I was really sad. And it's just like when they tear houses down in that area, just like it tears something apart inside of me. So it's, yeah.
So you said you came back to Hot Springs in 2016. When did you leave Hot Springs?
When I finished high school, I left Hot Springs.
And I think I heard you say at the candidate forum the other night that when you came back, you noticed that so much stuff had been torn down from what the landscape looked like when you were growing up there. Does it look dramatically different now?
It looks, yes, dramatically different.
Mm-hmm.
It's it kind of just looks like a different place. It was so vibrant when I was young, and there was street traffic, or people walking around, and places to go and things to do right in that Pleasant Street neighborhood. So now a lot of things are just torn down. A lot of it, I wish there were pictures or something, because I'm like, what used to be there? But it just had, it was like home for me. And even though I didn't live over there, I live maybe like about 8 streets over. That's it's just a special place.
What was I going to ask you? So, I kind of lost my train of thought here.
I hope there are survivors.
Survivors?
That's funny. I said, you said you lost your train of thought.
Oh, okay, so, okay.
It's a silly joke.
So, oh, yeah, this is where I was going. I guess, were a lot of those homes in that neighborhood owned by people who are now deceased or got old, and maybe their kids and family weren't interested in living there? And
I would say that like the my mom's best friend's house is on Garden Street. And so she didn't have, or she did have children or stepchildren, but they never lived here in Hot Springs. I understand. I think they lived in Detroit, and I'm not clear. I think maybe the daughter went to Langston and moved to Detroit afterwards, but they didn't like grow up here as adults. I mean, live here as adults rather. So that's the case. And then a lot of times people just die, and then they leave the property to their children, and then maybe their children live elsewhere and don't think to maintain the property.
Right, so. Well, because a lot of people probably didn't make the decision you did, right, to come back home and maybe help take care of an ailing parent or an aging parent.
Right.
What do you think about the idea? I think Mr. Pritchett proposed this. You know, the city used to use its community development block grant funding for rehabbing individual homes. I think in the 10 or 11 years they did that, they were able to rehab over 100 houses. But, you know, now the focus has shifted to kind of a broader view, building sidewalks, putting money toward, you know, demolishing more homes, unfortunately, you know, increasing that line item in city budget where they used to tear down homes, and lot acquisition, buying lots so, you know, groups like Habitat Humanity can build homes on it. Would you like to see that CDBG approach return to kind of a more, I guess, micro level where you're working on an individual house, or do you like that the city has kind of taken a broader approach with that and looking to use that money to build out infrastructure like sidewalks and things like that? Maybe storm drains, you know, that's something that I don't think I've ever seen any CDBG money go toward a storm drain project.
Well, I think whatever, especially in the Pleasant Street district, whatever they do with the grant money to improve, I'm game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether or not they fix sidewalks or restore homes, I mean, either whatever they do over there is fine with me. You know, storm drainage, this problem that I'd mentioned was primarily on the eastern side of town where there's not a lot of traffic, but people still live there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see a lot of city involvement over there. So I'm just trying to say, yes, we see you over here. We care about you. And hopefully I could get elected and make sure that the storm drain doesn't, or the water from the storm drain doesn't flood their house, because that's really, really bad.
Yeah, I think there was more than one candidate the other last week who was talking about stormwater being an issue in District 2, and I never really had heard about that before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it seems like that would be a good project for community development block grant funds. Let's see here. What about the Majestic? Everybody's always talking about the Majestic. What should go there? Should the city even be involved in that property? What do you think? Should the city be trying to find the right developer to build this kind of project that they think is going to be a catalyst for that side of downtown? Or should the city just dispose of the property and get its money back and kind of take a back seat, not be so involved in it? What do you think?
Well, there are lots of things. I personally would like to see a hotel there, but I would also want to, you know, I did hear from residents at a previous meeting, one from Whittington Avenue and Central Avenue, when they were going to do the amphitheater. But I would like to just hear more about that. I think there should be more than one person or developers. I think that was maybe one developer that got to submit a proposal. So I would like to see more than one person submit a proposal and hear more from residents, and maybe that could be on a ballot, like what should go there. But I definitely think the city should be involved, because that's like the beginning of downtown, pretty much.
Yeah, it's kind of at the crossroads, isn't it?
Where right.
The three roads come together. Well, were you living here? Yeah, you were living here when they were having those community involvement sessions about the Majestic. I think that was in 2019, where they were, you know, anybody could come and pitch an idea, no matter how outlandish it seemed. Some of the ideas, you know, did seem pretty outlandish to me. Did you go to any of those meetings or participate in those?
I think I was at one that they talked about the vapors, like a hotel with takeaway. I don't remember exactly, but I did go to one of those meetings where they had ideas of what to do with that space.
And now the city is thinking about kind of putting that to the side and putting the Metro Partnership in charge, letting them, I guess, you know, drive the car for the next year. What do you think about that? Some people are saying, is it really appropriate to let a group like the Metro Partnership be the gatekeeper there, decide who gets to submit a proposal? Are they going to show us all the offers they get? Do you think that process lacks transparency? Do you like the idea of letting the Metro Partnership market the property and having kind of serving that gatekeeper function?
Now, that's not something I've thought a lot about, but I would like the city to still be involved in what happens on that property.
Because I think that's kind of the starting point for that conversation, right, is should the city be involved in this, or should it just, you know, wash its hands, sell the property, get its whatever $2.2 million back? And I think that's kind of a drawing line between candidates, you know, where you stand on the issue there. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the first question that you ask. We talked about the homelessness issue. That's kind of another question. Is that something the city should be wading into, or is that something that's better left to the private sector to deal with?
Well, I think the city definitely should weigh in on the homeless issue, because these are people, and this could get, it needs to be managed, or things could get out of control, you know. And I don't have the answer to all of this, but it definitely needs to be something that's taken a look at by the city.
I remember when I was, I guess, growing up in high school in the late 90s, early 2000s. You probably lived here. Well, maybe not. I don't know if you lived here around that time or not, but I don't remember homelessness being as conspicuous as it is now. Do you remember that when you were growing up?
I remember maybe one or two.
You didn't really see people,
right,
holding signs?
No, I didn't see people holding signs at all. And I didn't see the people at night ever, so maybe they had somewhere to go. But now it's something that really can't be ignored. Like, it's there, mm-hmm, you know, and it's not going away, and it can grow. So I think some of the city needs to partner, or maybe see how homelessness is addressed in other cities and address it.
Right. Because I don't even think that the issue was really on the city's radar until the people started showing up on the corners with their signs, and
right,
the city was getting a lot of complaints. Hey, right, you need to do something about this. And I think that put the issue on the city's agenda, on the city's portfolio. But, you know, like they've said, there's no such thing as loitering, because the courts have pretty much invalidated every local and state loitering statute.
Right. There's with homelessness, there are, and I hear, you know, things that can be done, but I just, it's not something that I've thought something, I mean, not that I've not thought about it, but I see it. It is a problem. It's not something that can be ignored. And there are partnerships that could be formed. You know, I think, you know, it's becoming, you know, I see men that, you know, that have come here from, like, Louisiana or even Little Rock, and they said, well, there's water here, you know, we could always have water, but you know, there needs to be something done about that, about the homeless population.
I was reading about what the city of Houston's done. I think a lot of people think that Houston has probably made the most progress, mm-hmm, on their homelessness issue. And they have they call it a housing first strategy, where they, I guess, use all their resources and they bring all these groups together, like you're talking about, all these nonprofits and faith-based groups, and try to get them to really work together toward a common end. And they've been able to really make a dent in helping people find homes. I think the people that they've put in homes, you know, I think they help them out for a year. Then after that year, I think more than three quarters of those people are still in their homes. So it's pretty interesting to see what they've done with their problem. They've looked at it. It's homelessness is always going to be around. We can't right. totally alleviate it, but there are things we can do. And they have a housing first strategy where they don't make people, you know, get job training or go to rehab as a condition for shelter. I think somebody equated it to that's like asking somebody who's drowning to take swimming lessons, you know, while they're drowning. So it's an interesting approach that they have. Let's see. Affordable housing. What do you think about the zoning code? Do you think more zones need to allow multifamily housing apartments? Currently, I think it's only in one zone. R4 is where you can build an apartment complex without having to get a conditional use permit. Do you think that more districts need to allow denser types of housing than what the current zoning code allows?
I did get this question asked of residents when I was asking, and this is something that I would, or they wanted me to explain. I've talked to a couple, maybe this doesn't answer your question directly, but I did talk to a couple residents that wanted to put a mobile home on their property. I don't know what the width of the mobile home, would it go through the street or the neighborhood, but two separate times they told me, well, my neighbor has a mobile home across the street, and they said that I couldn't have a mobile home on my property because of zoning issues. And so that was a little confusing to me, just only because I'm having a conversation about putting or people putting mobile homes on their property. So that's something that I think definitely needs to be addressed or looked at. Far as apartment buildings and District 2, or what was the rest of your, sorry.
Well, you know, the city has four residential zones.
Right.
Four main ones. You know, there's R1, R2, R3, and they're all over the city. It just depends on, I guess, the zoning designation depends on your level of density primarily, how many people are living like within a square mile or a certain area. And the R4 zone is the only zone currently on the table of uses where you can have a multifamily housing in. Some of the other ones you could do it through a conditional use, but that's the only one. Do more zones need to allow multifamily housing as a permitted use, you think?
I would like to hear from residents of why the pros and cons of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the how many people are living like too close to each other, because it becomes you know, people will have like a lot of you know, dogs or cars, you know, you don't want people to be crowded. They're day-to-day since, you know, just crowded. So I think those zones should be definitely taken a look at.
You go to a lot of city meetings. Do you ever go to the Planning Commission meetings?
I went to the Planning Commission once there wasn't a seat, so I sat outside.
Oh, yeah. See what else? We haven't talked about vacation rentals, short-term rentals. That's another issue that it's kind of bubbled up here in the last year and a half. What do you think about that? It kind of begins with the same starting question. Is this something the city should be trying to regulate or get involved in, or is it just something that they should kind of, you know, let happen?
Well, no, I went to one of those board of directors meetings where there was a short-term rental at the end of the street. I think it was a dead-end street. And then they also brought an RV there. So maybe the house is maybe suitable for six people, but they had 30 people, and they had parties and, you know, keeping up a lot of noise for the neighbors. So I understood that the owner lived in California somewhere, and so they don't get to see the problem that it's causing for the neighborhood. So, you know, when you're, or you didn't ask, but if there is a limit on how many.
The cap.
Yeah, right. The cap. If there's a limit, like maybe if it's 400, then this person should have to apply for a renewal or something, because they maybe need their privileges taken away if they're going to have a whole bunch of people having a party on a street disturbing the neighbors. That's not fair, you know, and then they don't have to deal with it because they're out in California somewhere. So there needs to be, I think the city should be involved and, you know, look at these people. You can renew if you, you know, abide by the rules, and there should be rules. They shouldn't just be left to cause a nuisance for the neighbors.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about vacation rentals being a force of revitalization? I hear people talk all the time about how much, I guess, capital and energy vacation rentals have brought to District 1 up by, you know, Whittington and Park. Do you think the city needs to embrace vacation rentals as a source of revitalization? Do you think that can help revitalize some homes? If people bought property, fixed up a house, and maybe used it for a few years as a vacation rental to get their investment back, and then maybe turn it into a long-term housing later?
Well, you know, vacation rentals are being used all over the world. I think that this could be a good thing if it's managed with rules, but not if it's going to be a problem for the people that have to live there year-round.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's kind of brought, I think I've put this in story several times, it's kind of brought the city's tourism and visitor economy to people's front doors in some areas where there are problem STRs, right?
Right.
Okay. Did we talk about everything? Is there anything that you wanted to say?
Well, I'm glad you asked.
Okay.
I have a YouTube channel, and I won't say I'm the first to have a YouTube channel, but I have some good information on there for anyone that has questions about how city government is run, if they're interested in running for office, and just good day-to-day information. Arkansas is one of the lowest in voter participation, so I was also trying to register 100 voters, and I'm really nervous talking to you right now, but on my channel, I'm much more relaxed. So I would like for everyone listening to follow me on YouTube and subscribe to my YouTube channel, Phyllis for City Director. And I also have a GoFundMe page, and that's Phyllis for City Director. And you can contact me at phyllisforcitydirector@gmail.com.
Okay. How's that going, the voter registration drive? Have you been able to get some people registered to vote?
I am out talking to people every day. I'm in laundromats, stores. I will be going into parking lots. And I kind of took a few days off, but I'm still hoping I get to my 100 registered voters.
So your campaign, you've kind of been documenting a lot of it, haven't you, on
yes.
video?
Yes.
How come you wanted to document it? Is that for your content, for your YouTube channel, or just to kind of show people how the process works of running for local office?
Right. Well, I have a lot of information. I grew up in politics. I've worked on a national campaign, and I learned a lot, and I wanted to share that. I wanted to empower residents, and I also try to get younger people involved, because looks like we may have a generation of people that just don't vote and don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to share information with them so they can be empowered.
Okay. Well, thanks for talking with us today. I hope I didn't make you too nervous, but I enjoyed talking with you. This is Phyllis Beard. She's running for District 2 on the Hot Springs Board of Directors. Thanks for joining us on Garland County Vote 2022. Early voting starts October 24th and runs through November 7th. Election Day is Tuesday, November 8th.